Startups are eyeing the market for space tourism. NASA is discovering habitable planets. This hour, we imagine an interplanetary vacation. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. My guests this hour, Olivia Koski and Jana Gervich, authors of Vacation Guide to the Solar System. In it, they take real data from NASA and other sources to create a whimsical and accurate picture of what it would really be like to travel our solar system. So pack your bags for an exciting trip to the moon and beyond. First, this hour's news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care including independent living, assisted living, skilled, and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Startups are eyeing the market for space tourism. NASA, as we've been hearing in the news, is discovering habitable planets, many, many of them. This hour, we imagine an interplanetary vacation. My guests are Olivia Koski and Jana Gervich. They are the authors of Vacation Guide to the Solar System. In this book, they take real data from NASA and other sources to create a whimsical, tongue-in-cheek, but also accurate picture of what it would really be like to travel in our solar system. Take a vacation. Olivia is one of the creators of something called the Gorilla Science Collective. Jana is an astronomer. She's worked at the American Museum of Natural History. Both of them join us from WBEZ in Chicago today. Good afternoon to you, Jana and Olivia.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, thanks for having us.
I'm holding your book in my hand. It's a delight to look at because it looks just like a vacation guide, Intergalactic Travel Bureau Vacation Guide to the Solar System. We want to reach out to our listeners this hour. As you listen, I think you'll get into the flavor of what we're doing, mixing really true science about space with our imaginations. I want to ask our listeners, what questions would you have for our tour guides, Jana and Olivia, were you to actually vacation somewhere in the solar system? And you'll get descriptions of several of the places you might want to go. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Well, as long as we have our feet on terra firma before we take off on our little voyage from Earth to some of the places you outline in this book, tell us, why write a book about interplanetary vacations now when human feet haven't touched another world, as you point out in your book, since 1972?
Well, it seems like now is the time. I mean, as you mentioned, there are lots of startups that are promising to take people to space. And, you know, we want them to be prepared when they go to know what to expect and how to prepare for their trip. But it all started with this thing called the Intergalactic Travel Bureau, which is a space travel planning agency where we welcome the public to come meet with a travel agent and plan their dream vacation to space. So we've been doing this for the past 5 years. Mm-hmm. We plan thousands of vacations for people, and it just seemed natural to create a vacation guide.
So vacations planned in the last 5 years, not just in our solar system, but farther away?
So we say we will send someone out of the solar system, but it's a one-way trip, so we definitely aren't guaranteeing that you're going to get there alive or ever.
That's right. You do have in this book, due diligence here. You do advise people there are numerous ways to die in space, so put your affairs in order before leaving Earth. What were some of the partial list of risks you had in there? Your bones being whittled away, I think that was one of them. Asteroid collisions.
Yeah, and being left behind somewhere is also one of those risks, as anyone who watched the movie The Martian will be familiar with.
Tell us about your approach to this book, because it is whimsical, it's tongue-in-cheek, but it is real because you research the science. So how are we to understand your approach here?
Yeah, so we talked to many scientists, and it was very fun because oftentimes these people have been researching these planets or moons for many years, and they haven't really necessarily thought about the human experience of going there. And so it was really fun to talk with them about what they would like to do if they were to visit these locations and kind of get the human perspective on it.
And a big part of this book is, of course, the artwork. We have this amazing artist, Steve Thomas, who created these illustrations depicting people enjoying their vacations on various alien worlds. And, you know, I think when you see these pictures, it really helps you imagine what it would be like to be there. And so that was a big part of the collaboration and bringing sort of the art and science together in a unique way. And, you know, Jana and I had quite a few conversations about the accuracy, you know, the scientific accuracy of certain things. She has a PhD in astronomy, and so, you know, wanted to make sure that things were accurate in the book. Even though we do take some artistic liberties, we do talk about, you know, hotels and, you know, your spaceships and hot air balloons. On other planets.
To the artwork, it is magnificent. It's sort of a retro look to it, but very appealing. I'm looking at the Mercury's Kasendi Resort, home of the low gravity aerial acrobatic championship, and then we have a motocross or a bicyclist there in a space suit leaping over the landscape from one of the cliffs there. So we're imagining also that we're going in a time when there are resorts on some of these planets, right?
That's right. So the imagery is from a world in which we're regularly sending people on vacations to these other places, which is obviously not the case right now. But I think, you know, people can really identify with the idea of going, everyone's gone on vacation or can dream about going on vacation. And so it kind of brings the science home a little bit and allows people to relate to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take off from the Earth, and the closest stop, the first stop you have in the book is the moon, where humans have been before, up until, as we said, 1972, the last time. Why would we want to visit the moon from a vacation perspective? What is there to see?
Well, I think it's really compelling, right, because everybody can, even children, can look up and see the moon in the sky. But one really amazing feature of the moon is its low gravity. It has about 1/6 Earth's gravity at the surface. And so it's a great place to go if you're into sports. And so you can kind of imagine what it would be like to play baseball on the moon. So maybe you'd call it spaceball. And it'd be different in a lot of ways. You could throw the ball much, much further, almost like 30 times as far. And also, you know, home runs would be very easy to do. So I would imagine that with space ball, you'd have to have a net to prevent yourself from having to chase after these balls, which have gone super, super far.
But no curveballs on
the moon. No curveballs on the moon.
Well, why no curveballs?
Well, so they rely on air pressure. So a lot of these curveballs and knuckleballs and things like that rely on the interaction between the baseball and the air. Mm. And, of course, the moon doesn't have any significant atmosphere at all. And so if you try to throw those, it's not going to work.
Right. I like your description. You have actually a little graphic from your artist about how to walk on the moon. And you say in the book it's like walking on a trampoline that is underwater. So if you can imagine that, it pushes up, and so you have to reckon with the fact, and we've seen the men walking on the moon in archive footage there, that you can go up and then it takes a little bit longer to come down, right?
Yeah, you have to have patience, and you can't push off too hard because you can jump higher because of that low gravity. So it takes a little bit of practice and getting used to.
And of course, as you point out in your book, some great historical sites on the moon to vacation at. You would want to see the Apollo landing sites. What would we see there?
Well, there's a lot of really amazing stuff that the astronauts left behind from the Apollo mission. Part of the spacecraft was left behind. There's a flag that's been left behind and some instruments that they use while they're up there. There's a camera. And as a matter of fact, we have a virtual reality moon app that we've released called Space Vacation App. So
really, how do people find that?
If you go to gorillascience.org/ITBVR, you can download the Space Vacation app for your iPhone or Android device. Mm-hmm. And then you just need one of those cardboard viewers to get yourself on your space vacation to the moon.
It might be a good time to tell us briefly, what is Gorilla Science?
Yeah, so Gorilla Science is an organization that brings together artists and scientists to imagine, how science affects culture and their everyday life. So Gorilla Science created the Intergalactic Travel Bureau as a way to spark conversations about astronomy. But Gorilla Science does a lot of other types of experiences and public outreach related to science, because we believe science is a tool for empowerment that belongs to everyone.
Okay. If you've just joined us, Olivia Kosky with us at Jana Gervich. They are authors of the Intergalactic Travel Bureau's Vacation Guide to the Solar System, an imagined vacation guide to planets and other celestial bodies in our solar system, but firmly embedded in real science. So if you'd like to join our conversation, what questions would you have for our tour guides were you to actually vacation somewhere in the solar system? 1-866-780-9100. Don is with us. Hi, Don in Iowa City. What's your question?
Good afternoon. Question for the tour guides. I would think one of the questions I'd hear a lot would be, are we there yet? Things right. How it takes such a long time to get everywhere.
Oh, yes. Great question, Don, because the distances, Jan and Olivia, and Don, sure, I mean, grade school or any other pictorial representation of our solar system tells us that it's a crowded place, big planets, not very much space, but that's not the way it is. It's the opposite, right?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about the moon, and, for me, the moon is very appealing because it's so close. You could get to the moon in 9 hours if you were just doing a flyby. And in fact, you know, startup companies, Elon Musk at SpaceX, has sold tickets to the moon. So I think the moon is a very achievable space vacation destination. And we could see trips to the moon in the coming years, you know, within a decade potentially. But yeah, some of the other places will take a little bit longer to get to.
Mm-hmm. But you do, you know, you say, how do we prepare for the flight? You have to then during the flight, you may be in a rocket ship that is weightless, or you might have microgravity, or you may have one of these 2001 Space Odyssey things that spins and simulates gravity?
Yeah, for the longer duration flights, like to Pluto, for example, you know, it's going to take a decade at least to get there. A decade in microgravity would be devastating to the human body. So if humans really do want to venture on longer trips, we're going to need artificial gravity to keep our bones from whittling away.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a trip to our first planet after talking about the moon. By the way, the moon, you want to see one of the other must-see places, Tycho Crater. This is the one that is visible from the Earth, right? This is sort of that patch on the moon.
Yeah, it's one of the most sort of famous features on the moon. I think everybody has seen it, even if they're not sure what it's called. But yeah, Tycho is a wonderful place to visit.
Okay, so let's head toward the sun to make our first planetary visit outside of the Earth, that is. You write in your tour guide, if you're looking for a sun-filled holiday, there's no better place than Mercury. this is the closest planet to the sun. And you say you have to be a real sun worshiper. What would you need to survive a visit to Mercury?
Well, this is one of those locations that's much more speculative. It might not be worth the risk to send people to Mercury. But when we're planning space vacations, we're always looking for the really adventurous, maybe danger-seeking types.
Right.
And so the problem with Mercury is you just have very, very high radiation levels. You're going to have a lot of difficulty controlling the temperature environment. And temperature is also like a very different thing on Mercury. In the sense that when you don't have an atmosphere to kind of buffer the temperatures around you, it is difficult for heat to transfer. But you could imagine a lot of heat transferring from the ground. You wouldn't survive on the sun-facing side of Mercury. But people have speculated that you know, with a long, long time to cool off and very reflective surface, if you were to dig under the surface, you might be able to create a habitable environment for humans where they could survive if you were able to have air and pressure and be well protected from the heat.
Some minor engineering challenges there.
Minor engineering challenges.
Actually, not so minor.
I wonder what it would look like. I was looking up at the sun this morning and wondering, okay, if I'm on Mercury, how big is that sun going to be in the sky? Will it sort of be the whole sky?
You know, it's not going to be the whole sky. It will be noticeably bigger. But the interesting thing about Mercury is that it has an elliptical orbit. So the size of the sun does change throughout the year.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, and the other amazing thing on Mercury in terms of the sun is this idea that because the line between the lit side of Mercury and the dark side of Mercury, we call that the terminator, it moves very, very slowly because of the rotation of Mercury and its orbit around the sun. So you could actually walk in the sunset. You know, I wouldn't recommend it for purposes of staying alive, but imagine you could stay alive. That line moves at just 2.2 miles per hour. And so you could imagine walking an eternal sunset on Mercury. It'd be really amazing.
Experience. That sounds good. And why not do that while, as you point out, celebrating your birthday twice per day? This is, I'm not quite understanding. Explain this. A solar day on Mercury is longer than its year?
Yeah, so when you go to other planets, you notice that time is different. You know, a day, a 24-hour day, a 365-day year just seems like the natural order of things. But on Mercury, the planet rotates so slowly, and it moves around the sun so fast. So it's the closest planet from the sun, and the closer you are to the sun, the faster you're going to move around the sun. And so its year ends up being a lot faster than, you know, an Earth year. But its rotation is much, much, much slower. So that's why, as Jana mentioned, you could walk the sunset because a day lasts several months, several Earth months.
Mm. Yes. So the day on Mercury, in terms of when the sun goes from noon to the highest point in the sky to the highest point, is 176 Earth days. So, you know, you could pack a lot in.
I'm trying to wrap my brain around that. I'll continue to work on it. It's really a great exercise in imagination to imagine something like a day being different than what we have 24 hours or a week different or whatever, a year, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Let's go back to our phones, 1-866-780-9100. Jana Gervich and Olivia Koski with us. Their book, Vacation Guide to the Solar System. Patrick is with us in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Patrick. What's your question?
Hey, great show. I really appreciate it. Couple of quick questions. In terms of the ability to get there quickly or quicker than with today's chemical rockets. Are you familiar with the M-Drive and how do you feel about innovative technologies being tested now that are breaking the boundaries of chemical rockets, in particular the M-Drive? And also, Bigelow was recently interviewed, and you're probably aware of that, and the gentleman that developed the collapsible space habitat was recently implemented on the space station. Has professed to have strong, undisputable knowledge of extraterrestrial life, which I think is really a fascinating subject as well. Having had my own experience with that, I worked with a guy that published 20 books on the subject and was an expert on Area 51. And I firmly believe, having read the evidence, that there's no question that we're not alone, but it's a fascinating subject. I'd be curious if you have any thoughts on it.
Thanks. Okay, Patrick, thanks. Three items there. Let's go through those before we get to our break.
Yeah. So, you know, the technology question is very interesting. We talk a little bit about ion propulsion in the book and nuclear propulsion. I think there are a lot of, you know, ideas for possibilities of how to travel these great distances. But, you know, what we like to talk about is 100 years ago, when airplanes were the cutting edge technology, and airplanes were kind of at the level that rocket ships are right now in terms of they were just coming out, there weren't commercial air flights. They traveled at 120 miles per hour. So that was sort of the greatest speed that human beings could imagine traveling at. And there's a book that was published in 1918 called Our Wonder World that has this image depicting, you know, space travelers going to Neptune. And, you know, in that particular image, they calculated at the speed of 120 miles per hour, they would reach Neptune in 2,571 years, you know, so way beyond the scope of a human lifetime. And of course, now we travel at tens of thousands of miles per hour, and we can reach Neptune in just a decade. So, you know, I'm not an expert on, you know, M-Drive or some of those more advanced technologies, but in 100 years, you know, who knows? We might very well be visiting places outside the solar system, which now is honestly very difficult for me to fathom.
Mm-hmm. And when you're planning your vacation, you have to take into account the planetary alignment so you can use these sort of slingshots of gravity to get to places, I'd imagine, right?
Yeah, that's complicated.
Yeah, you can save a lot of fuel by using the gravity of any planets that are in between to kind of give you an extra kick. You're basically kind of hitching a ride on that galaxy on that planet's gravity as it's orbiting around the sun. And so that can save a lot of fuel. Another thing that is really important to realize is it's the complex dynamics of the solar system make it difficult to stop over on your way. You kind of have to go, you can do these gravitational assists, but landing on a planet takes a lot more fuel. So you're not going to be doing layovers or things like that. You're going to have to just fly by these areas.
Before we come up to a break in a couple minutes, Patrick's other question about extraterrestrials. Did you take into account talk about that question, you know, what if we encounter other life?
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's not evidence that that aliens have visited us, but I think it's a very interesting scientific question to think about the prevalence of life in the universe. And as an astronomer, I've seen, you know, over the last 10 years, we've discovered thousands of planets around other stars. Now, in terms of a vacation, these are very, very far away.
Yes.
And are really a step beyond what we can consider visiting in our lifetimes. But, you know, it gives a lot of opportunity for life to arise. And so we have not yet found evidence of life elsewhere. But I think if you think about all the stars in the sky having potential planets associated with them, you know, it could be very unlikely or happen a very small fraction of the time. But it's hard to imagine in all the stars and all the galaxies that life only arose once here on Earth.
Mm-hmm. Patrick's other question was about, you know, places to live on the planets. I want to focus in on what you focus in on the book. You say we need special spacesuits for a lot of these environments, toxic gases, unbelievable temperature extremes here. So we need a really good spacesuit, right?
Yeah, we do. We need a lot of things to protect us and keep us safe and comfortable while we're in space. And he mentioned Robert Bigelow, who has a company that is trying to send hotels to space, to these inflatable habitats that would then orbit the Earth, and that you'd pay maybe $20 million to stay a night in one of these inflatable habitats. So I think that's really fascinating possibility.
And okay. They tested these inflatable habitats too in a module on the International Space Station. So, you know, in terms of weight, which is very important for keeping costs down, inflatable habitats and kind of new approaches are really important.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. Back with Jana Gervich and Olivia Koski. They are authors of the Intergalactic Travel Bureau's Vacation Guide to the Solar System. Rooted in real science, it's an imaginary vacation guide to planets, and we'll continue with our expedition here into the other planets. I think Venus and Mars we want to get to. Certainly Jupiter and Saturn. We'll find out where we go after a short break. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Fly me to the moon and let me play among the stars. And let me see what a spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand, yeah. In other words, darling, kiss me. Fill my heart with song.
And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're imagining an interplanetary vacation with Jana Gervich and Olivia Koski. They are authors of Vacation Guide to the Solar System. They've taken some real data from NASA, from other places, creating a tongue-in-cheek, a whimsical but accurate picture when you talk about the science of what it would be like to travel in our solar system. Now, we need really special suits and propellant systems to get us around. Of course, that goes without saying. But this is based in the science. We're talking with them. We're visiting various planets. If you'd like to join our conversation, what questions would you have? Where would you like to go and ask about? If you stepped into their intergalactic travel bureau and said, I want to go to fill in the blank, what question would you have about it? 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We were at the moon, Mercury, Olivia, and Jana. Let's go to Venus. And I wonder if you could share with us a little bit of the writing that you have here. It's so delightful. Also, you mentioned the artwork, super, from Mr. Thomas. I'm forgetting his first name.
Steve Thomas.
Steve Thomas. Beautiful little book with all these illustrations, but also the writing here. You've really stepped into the role of an intergalactic travel bureau in describing these places. Can you tell us, pick a snippet from the introduction to Venus to give us a flavor of that, if you could?
Sure, yeah. They say Venus is for lovers, and as long as you stick to the temperate climate high above the planet's scorching surface, Venus is true to its namesake, the Roman goddess of love, beauty, and desire, providing a relaxing atmosphere in which to enjoy your time away from the stresses of work. Many vacationers decide to visit after seeing it as a bright star beckoning them from Earth's night sky. It is a place well-suited to introspective romantics.
That's nice. Later on, you say the floating cities of Venus kiss divine cloudscapes. You'll feel like you're in heaven, adrift among its sulfuric acid mists.
Yeah.
So you're saying when you go to Venus, because we were in Mercury, we are at Mercury, that was the closest to the sun, but you said Venus is the hottest planet, guess because of the clouds or what?
That's right, yeah. So it has a very strong greenhouse effect. It has a super thick carbon dioxide atmosphere, which retains a lot of the heat. So on the surface of Venus, which I might add is not a place you want to visit, it's hot enough to melt tin, and it's also very, very high pressure. And so the probes that have been sent there usually don't survive very long. Sometimes they don't send any information back. Sometimes they'll send, you know, one tempting picture. But what really surprised me about Venus is there's been a lot of thought about its upper atmosphere because the conditions there are quite hospitable for humans, you know, apart from the sulfuric acid clouds. But in terms of temperature and pressure, it's very similar to Earth. So you could imagine constructing, you know, an airship or even a floating city, because if you created a bubble filled with Earth's atmosphere, it would float in the upper atmosphere of Venus. So you could imagine sending people there. And there has been there have been papers, speculative papers from groups within NASA thinking about how humans would survive in the atmosphere of Venus.
And you had also asked about spacesuits. So what's interesting about the atmosphere of Venus is that you wouldn't need a traditional spacesuit because the atmospheric pressure there is similar to what it is on the surface of Earth. Now, you would definitely need protection from the sulfuric acid sky. But if you just had a tank of air and a suit protecting you from that environment, you wouldn't need a pressurized spacesuit like you do in outer space.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's in the atmosphere of Venus, not on the surface.
You also offer some recreational tips here. What comes to mind in connection with Venus? Help me on this. Something like you drop plastic bottles from your cloud hangout wherever you are, and what happens to them?
Yeah, so because you're going from an area of high pressure or lower pressure to higher pressure, you could imagine crushing a bottle into a crumpled mess. Of course, you have to have a very temperature-resistant bottle, but if you did have one, that might be something you could do for recreation.
So it'd be similar to sinking something in the ocean and having it crushed by that pressure, if you could imagine it that way, perhaps.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to Mars. Our time is getting away from us. These intergalactic trips take a long time. We only have an hour, though. Mars. Who hasn't dreamt of setting foot on the red planet, you write, with butterscotch skies, colossal canyons, and the tallest volcano in the solar system, Mars is an oasis for romantics and adventurers alike. The vast, frigid deserts are exotic, yet strangely familiar. It's like a smaller version of Earth in some apocalyptic parallel universe where the oceans have dried up and the atmosphere has drifted away to almost nothing. What's left is dust, rock, and a plethora of luxury resorts where you can escape the weight of all the gravity and heavy air of Earth. Welcome
that
to
last,
Mars.
Yeah, that last little part of the sentence was a minor embellishment.
Right. So you point out you better like dust if you go to Mars. Dust is a way of life on Mars, you're right.
That's right, yeah. And it gets blown into the atmosphere, which creates this kind of like haze, and also you can have these kind of swirling whirlwinds that travel over the over the surface, kind of like dust devils. And so you could imagine going into these dust devils. They can stretch over a mile high and over 500 feet wide. And so the wind, you know, there's not a dense atmosphere on Mars, so it might not blow you over as much as you might expect. Mm-hmm. But you'll get a lot of tiny little dust particles that could hit your faceplate.
Mm-hmm. And you're moving around in some kind of rover. You point out that gas-filled rubber tires won't work on Mars as the cold temperatures would cause them to shatter. But we do have old probes on the surface of Mars. These would be your historical sites to visit, right?
That's right. So you could imagine, visiting the resting place of the Spirit or Curiosity rover. And I imagine, you know, someday people will.
Mm-hmm. One of the few great places in the solar system where you can bike. I guess you have to solve the rubber tires problem, right?
Yeah, so you need a different type of tire. The interesting thing, and we talked to experts in how bikes work in terms of physics, and discovered that having a high gravity is really essential to being able to turn a bike effectively. So if you were to bike on Mars, you'd have to take large radius turns. But the nice thing is, because it has a very sparse atmosphere, you don't get a lot of the air resistance that would slow you down as you were biking very fast. So if you had a long, flat stretch of road on Mars, you could get up to some incredible speeds.
Mm. And you point out, too, Mars, a great place to learn to juggle. You don't have to think that fast. The balls come down fairly slowly, right? Slow motion.
Yep, that's right.
Let's move on to the outer planets. We want to make sure we get to a few of those before this hour ends with Jana Gervich and Olivia Koski, authors of Vacation Guide to the Solar System, imagining vacationing on a number of places in our solar system. Well, let's take the big ones, the ones that we can see from the Earth easily. Jupiter in our outer solar system. Here you write, if you are the sort of person who is drawn to unbridled chaos, Jupiter will not disappoint you. Here is a planet so large, a single one of its storms would swallow Earth.
Yeah, so Jupiter's atmosphere is a fascinating place. In fact, Jupiter is a gas giant, so it doesn't have a surface in a traditional sense. It's really kind of gases and strange materials all the way down. But those swirling cloud patterns created by different materials, different chemicals in those clouds create these beautiful, beautiful patterns. And so you could visit the Red Spot, for example, the most famous storm, but there's many other things that are happening creating patterns in Jupiter's atmosphere. There's some lovely imagery from a probe which arrived at Jupiter in 2016. It's called the Juno probe. So I'd highly recommend you look at those images. It looks like a Van Gogh painting, all of the swirling, turbulent cloudscapes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you point out, too, since we can't really land on the surface of this gas giant Jupiter, we do have moons. We have so many moons, 60-some of them.
Yeah, there's about 67 moons orbiting Jupiter, and some of my favorites are called the Galilean moons. These were discovered by Galileo, and they're just fascinating. One of them, called Io, is covered in volcanoes. You can see volcanoes erupting, you know, spewing material miles and miles into the sky. And then Europa is another Galilean moon that's covered in ice. There's this many miles thick layer of ice that's covering what they think is a liquid water ocean beneath it. And so we imagine taking deep sea diving excursions into the interior of Europa and potentially searching for life because, you know, there's water there and scientists speculate that there could be life deep inside Europa.
Jupiter's neighbor, just to the outer side of the solar system, Saturn is with us. Of course, the beautiful rings there would be an attraction. I imagine you walk into your vacation guide, your intergalactic bureau, and people are going to say, I want to see those rings close up, right? Can you do that when you travel to Saturn?
Absolutely. So some people think the rings are a solid ring going around Saturn. And what it really is small ice particles to large, like building size ice particles, basically a bunch of icebergs, or you could think of them as little moonlets orbiting around Saturn. And there are moons that orbit within gaps in those rings as well. So you could imagine going, landing on one of those moons and riding around inside the rings itself. It might not be the best view, actually, because you're seeing it side edge on, and so it might be flat. But those moons also create beautiful patterns, rippling patterns due to their gravity as they're orbiting around. And so there's fantastic images from the Cassini probe, which visited Saturn, showing all of these amazing dynamics of the rings.
Mm-hmm. Here's another nice bit of humor in your guide here. Saturn is more massive and larger than Earth, providing unique conditions for skydiving. It's important to choose a reputable company. And rule number one is to book with someone who takes payment after you have safely completed your fall. Disreputable
right.
operators have a habit of starting their skydivers too high, where they accelerate too quickly. By the time these unlucky adventurers reach the denser gases, they are traveling so fast, they burn up like meteors. So there's a tip there, right, to
yep.
make sure that your adventurers who come to your bureau come back safely. Also, Saturn, you write, it's fun to wade in the hydrocarbon lakes and rivers. Okay, we need a special suit for that. But there are really lakes and rivers on Saturn?
So not on Saturn itself, but on one of the moons of Saturn called Titan. It's really, if I could travel anywhere in the solar system, I would travel to Titan. There are lakes and rivers made out of liquid, not liquid water. It's liquid methane and ethane. And so, you know, it's kind of like a beach vacation, but it's very, very cold, 300 some degrees below zero. And Titan is also very unusual because it has an extremely thick atmosphere. And it's so thick and the gravity is lower that you could actually fly under your own power. So you'd need a large suit with wings. But you could imagine if you could get up enough speed and flapping your arms, you could mm-hmm. get airborne in the atmosphere of Titan, fly over these methane and ethane lakes. It also has these dunes, sand dunes that encircle the equator that are very, very dark and kind of the consistency of granola. So you might want to take a peek at those as well during your flight.
I have to say, when we, having just talked about Jupiter and Saturn, Uranus seems kind of boring. but you found some exciting things. Your marketing slogan I see there, get tilted for the sideways planet.
Yeah, what's fascinating about Uranus is that it orbits the sun just askew, just completely turned over on its side. And it's a little bit of a mystery of why that is. But, you know, I'm fascinated by Uranus just because, you know, Uranus and Neptune both, they're planets that we have a lot less information about than some of the other planets.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't sent very many scientific missions there to discover what mysteries lie there. So as a space vacationer, you know, you would really probably be discovering a lot of new information about these places.
And then on to Neptune, the last official planet. You say sorry to Pluto. It is a celestial body, but it's downgraded to a planet. But as to Neptune, considering its remoteness, you write, the extreme cold and the windy weather, there is no good time to visit Neptune. There is no bad time either.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Neptune is it's the windiest planet. So it's kind of a world of winds and gases and fluids.
Windy, so, yeah. I think you said at the equator, 1,200 miles per hour winds.
Yeah, we think of Jupiter as being this planet of storms, and Jupiter gets quite a bit of attention. But, you know, Neptune is probably one of the more underappreciated planets. It's just as stormy as Jupiter, if not more so.
We've had a lot of fun this hour talking about your guide to the solar system, a vacation guide. But in the last few minutes, let me have you reflect a little bit about what serious messages you want readers to take away from this whimsical vacation guide at a time when, well, in by some people, you know, science, the scientific method and so forth is under siege a little bit by our society, isn't it?
Yeah, and the more you think about what it would be like to visit space or other planets as a human, the more you realize the value of Earth and how great it is that we can just go outside and not have to worry about a spacesuit and things like that. And I just think it's very important to take that into account and to recognize that we can't think of places, for instance, like Mars as a backup planet for if we, you know, mess up Earth too much. It just doesn't work like that. It's not an environment in which humans can easily survive, and it would just take too much work. We need to really protect what we have here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One
thing that we're interested in is, you know, with the book and with the Intergalactic Travel Bureau, is hearing from you know, average people, like, what their thoughts are about humans going into space and, you know, having a conversation about what that's going to be like, because space, the exploration of space should be something that, you know, we as a society all do together. And the more that we understand, you know, some of the science and some of the, you know, technological challenges, the more that we can make informed choices about, you know, our space programs.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? Why do you think the role of science, particularly in regard to space travel, has changed since, you know, the 60s and the early 70s? This is when I grew up, and boy, I was writing NASA all the time, getting free packets of information and glossy photos, and couldn't get enough of it. It's changed, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, as a child, I was imagining people would be traveling to the moon or perhaps traveling to Mars, and I feel like I was kind of cheated out of that future. And I think there are a lot of people that are working very hard to make that a reality, and the public is very excited about space. And so I think that, you know, what we need to do is kind of connect that excitement to action and really get people to support, you know, both NASA and our space programs all around the world, and also support, you know, the private, the advances that are made on the private front in terms of developing technologies that can get us there more cheaply and safely.
Mm-hmm. We had one of you share one of your favorite activities and places. I wanted to have you pick any others you want. Pick an activity and a favorite planet to do it on as we close this show, or ones we haven't mentioned that would be a lot of fun on vacation.
Yeah, so one thing we didn't mention was the activities that one could do on Pluto. And so I think that visiting Pluto and skiing Pluto would be a really intriguing thing to do. It has these pink mountains made of nitrogen ice, and it's so cold on Pluto, you could imagine heating up your skis, and you'd get a little layer of vapor, which could reduce the friction. And also the gravity is very, very low. And so I think it'd be a smooth, you'd accelerate slowly as you were doing that. And that appeals to me because I don't like to go too fast when I ski.
Any other favorite activities you want to mention before we leave?
Well, I just want to go to the moon and I want to see it up close. I want to fly by the moon and experience microgravity on the way there. I think it would be so fun to bounce around a spaceship and try to do all the things that we do in normal life without the comforting pool of Earth.
Mm-hmm. Have you been in touch with Elon Musk?
Not yet. We keep waiting for his call.
Yeah, not yet. But
do you think
we'd be happy to talk to him?
Do you think, you said you felt you were cheated out of the vision you had as a child. Do you think it will happen in your lifetime? You think you'll do any of this you describe?
I don't know if I will, but I do think that there are people alive today that will travel to the moon and Mars. And so I look forward to that day.
As do I.
Okay, very good. We'll leave it there and go out with a little fitting music and remind our listeners that this has been a conversation with Olivia Kosky and Jana Gurevich. They are authors of The Vacation Guide to the Solar System. And check it out. It's got some beautiful artwork, beautiful writing, and really some insights into science. And as you just mentioned at the end, makes us appreciate our little planet, the third planet from the sun, the Earth, all the more. Thank you, Olivia. Thank you, Jana.
Thanks so much.
Thanks. This was a lot of fun.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Ben Stanton, and Lindsay Moon. Also, big thanks to WBEZ in Chicago today for helping us out. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.